Hello and welcome to A-Team Group's podcast on connecting risk data ecosystems, brought to you from our RegTech Summit in New York on the 15th November 2018. The podcast covers a keynote address from Steve McDonald, the Head of Market Development, Risk and Compliance Solutions at Refinitiv, who discusses the key considerations in identifying data relationships, explores what risk ecosystems exist today, outlines how risk data ecosystems can be connected and what is involved, and provides a use case application of a risk data ecosystem for AML and financial crime.
Thank you all for attending and for the opportunity to speak with you. I've been in the compliance and risk space for about 15 years from the perspectives of a software provider. And I've spent time building software as on a development team, acquiring solutions, helping customers understand solutions and proof of concepts as a salesperson. And currently I lead what we call a market development function at Refinitiv. Refinitiv is or was Thomson Reuters Financial and Risk up until a month ago. This is our new name and bold new company. So I'm actually not going to speak about our products today. I might touch upon some of them just for the purpose of articulating a point, but I'm not making this a commercial. In fact, you'll be surprised that some of this might be a bit self-deprecating at times. And what I really intend to do is to deliver a very honest assessment of, I think, what the evolution of the industry has been and how the things that we've been involved in have led into RegTech, and also discuss where the opportunities, I think, are for RegTech going forward to help expand this. I'm speaking about solutions in general, and I'm speaking about the wider space. So I'm going to make some controversial points, and I will run out of time. So we will. I will happily speak at the booth or and follow up conversations with you. Two main topics. One, I want to talk about technical innovation, sort of what I'm going to call the post-GRC world. And secondly, I'd like to talk about data innovation. And at Refinitiv, we operate in both environments. We're probably especially known for our data, with the large sources of many sources of data we have for financial data, risk data, screening data, etc. So let's do them both sort of quickly here, and I'll try to keep a brisk pace. One, let's talk about post-GRC. Is anyone familiar with GRC? Okay, I'm going to give a really, I'm going to explain it all in like one slide, maybe two. Then I'm going to beat a point home for a little while. But I was around for the beginning of this. I remember when the COSO framework came out that explained an approach to monitoring a control environment for managing enterprise risk in its earliest form, or in an early form anyway. And this was a very popular diagram. It was everywhere. And what happened is a lot of software vendors who either had been in the internal audit space or content management space built software that they thought could address this in a complete way. So they developed governance, risk, and compliance software. The term was created, I think, by Michael Rasmussen or in OSEG. And he was at Forrester at the time. There's a bit of debate over who created it, but it seemed to emerge at the very same time, and a lot of companies designed technology around this space. And as you can imagine, they all developed software that did very different things, that approached it very differently, fundamentally. And if they did that very differently, then we would expect to see lots of different representations for what that looks like. In one picture, in fact, in many, I'll explain what GRC is. GRC is a happy, colorful circle that has been repeated across a lot of vendors. I just took a small segment of these. It's free advertising for our competitors, but as you can see, there is a notion that what was a box is now what was a cube is now a circle. And you can't read this from where you're sitting, but they all say the same thing. They say governance, risk, and compliance, and they're in a circle. In fact, the most honest one is in the middle. It just says governance, risk, and compliance in a circle, and that's all it says. They work to differentiate themselves in terms of color and things like that. One of my favorites is this one, not to pick on the vendor, because we all do things like this, but they have SAP GRC versus SAS GRC. What could be more clear than that? They have blue and light blue and dark blue circles differentiating them, and one letter difference in the names of the company. The point is, there was a very common approach that was designed to make a common methodology that was important around a common framework of data, a common ecosystem that could be managed as one ecosystem. And this implied that internal audit groups and operational risk groups and Sarbanes-Oxley groups would all gather around this process risk and control framework and submit their data into an ecosystem that could be shared among them with common ratings and common risk taxonomies and things like that. So the company, to the earlier point in the panel, could have, or the gentleman up there, could have one software that does all this functional support and data repository normalized for these functions to have a harmonious, brightly colored GRC environment in a company. Well, I think history has proven a few things. One is that most companies have at least two or three of these, which instantly breaks the mold of a unified platform. And the reason they have a few of these, it could be internal organization, but part of it is because each of these groups needs certain kinds of functionality to power their department. One customer said to me early on, we know that each of the spokes of GRC, the functional components, is only going to power maybe 70% of the needs of that individual group using it. But that 30% loss in functionality is worth it to have all the data in one place. That is not true. What they found, what every customer came back and said, no, I'm an internal audit group. I want exactly what I need to execute my job well. I'm not going to give up 30% of my functional needs in order to be able to share data with another group. Each group really needs to find what it needed. So that threatened GRC. It's so common now. I actually contribute photos to stock photo sites, so I was very surprised to see that you can draw GRC on a piece of glass and sell that for $12 because it's that common. That also just says GRC. But so not to underplay it, because this has been important. It has been important for harmonization of methodologies, for the way companies have come together to think about the approach they have to governance, risk, and compliance, even if they haven't used the software exactly the way it was made to be used in the past. But I will contend that the group that really had the most trouble was compliance, the C in governance, risk, and compliance, because these pieces of software are built around a COSO framework, a very strict strict structure of process, risk, and controls. That is not how a lot of compliance groups work. Now, I was out there selling this solution for years to compliance groups, and I could never figure out why nobody was interested from compliance. Until one day, before I had a chance to sort of pitch the product, someone said to me, someone on Wall Street said, I want the software, but let me tell you what our process is first. And what they described had nothing to do with GRC. It was a regulatory change process. It actually looked like this. It was, they said, what we do is we monitor the regulatory environment. We look for changes in what the regulators are proposing or announcing, how they're enforcing. Then when we get that alert, we triage it to figure out who we have to give that to based on what jurisdiction they're in. Then we will work with the business to do a risk analysis, an impact analysis and an overall risk assessment. We'll review the controls that are in place, usually policies or trainings. Then we will, if we need to change something to be compliant, we'll issue some sort of change process and we'll manage that. And then we have a business as usual ongoing monitoring. And she said, this is what we do as a compliance group. In fact, that was just one of many compliance groups within but this was the regulatory change group. So this is a very simple view of it. But this was the first time that I got a sense that the GRC vendors had not built a product with enough workflow meant to do this type of application the way it should be done. Now, this is pretty simple. This is a simplified view. This is the more accurate one. I'm sure you can't read it from where you're sitting, but there's a lot to this, and it's a very complex need. It's difficult. That's why there's hundreds of compliance officers and lots of people from the business working. There's lots of information sources from which the compliance teams have to gather their data. There's lots of analysis they have to do to be able to track this and understand the impact and assess business processes to match it. It's a very complex process. And I will argue that in moving from basic GRC to this, which we happen to do because we recognize this to be an industry need, and we started building software for this out of our GRC platform, and then we're relaunching it with a new platform we have that's just a lot more flexible. See, GRC software is big. It's fairly rigid. It's not meant to be flexible. It's meant to actually corral different groups into a common structure. It's not meant to be changing. It's meant to almost curb that. So it seems kind of wrong to take a complex process like this that's extremely specific and only really relevant to the compliance group and apply a large and flexible by design software to it. So we think more about how we use our flexible software to address really specific needs like this. And I think if you consider the impact of RegTech on processes, I would be always considering, my recommendation would be considering what is GRC, which is a fairly defined process. And as soon as you start stretching that process to meet the needs of other groups, it may be that you've the need for GRC has departed. I would say that when we start managing this type of process, what we've built is probably more of a RegTech. It is it's consuming content from many sources. It's connecting to different ecosystems. It doesn't rely on a single GRC ecosystem. It brings it all together. So this is a screenshot of a poll we did in one of our customer meetings. And we ask things like, what do you need? We ask compliance groups, what do you need from a software provider? And most of them, what they say is more than half of the data they need to do the risk assessments is external to the organization. GRC software primarily focuses on internal structured data that people contribute to the system. But more than half of the data that they need is either is external to that. It's unstructured data. It could be what's in email repositories, it could be on the web somewhere, it could be inside their transaction data. But compliance groups need data that lives outside of the GRC framework typically. And bringing that data into a GRC framework, it had better be able to really receive that data for what it is. But that's not what GRC software is typically. That's not the problem it's been made to solve. As an industry, it does well what it's meant to do. But I think it has its limitations for compliance. Because the room has professionals from a lot of different areas, I'm going to switch to what this means in terms of data, but I'm going to switch examples from a GRC world into more of a third-party risk management or a customer KYC type environment as well. Because I think in here we see how RegTech has influenced the need for data and is helping transform the data requirements for these as well as software. Let me give it to you a bit from our perspective. This is a view from our search, but this could be other vendors because this is basically how the provider of screening data offers data. And consider the challenge if you search somebody named James Smith. You would get, in our database, 208 results for James Smith. You can see examples of different kinds. This is the classic challenge facing people doing customer due diligence is resolving if the name of the customer they're searching is in this database of people who've been implicated for international financial crime. If they're not in there, you're good. And chances are the person you're looking at is not in there. But you might have to go through 208 people to resolve those and make sure they aren't the person who's applying for an account in your bank. As you can see, some of it's easy because the birth dates are obviously wrong and things like that for the person you're talking to. But this is a lot of data. And so a lot of the efforts going in to this type of data is meant to solve this. So out of that 208, mostly could be false positives. But look on the right side. The category is a PEP, or politically exposed individual. PEPs are a problem because they introduce risk for bribery and corruption, so you have to be very careful. If you have a PEP who's applying, you need to know what their relationship is to political power. But the databases will typically tell you, right, the root data, if they are a PEP or not. In this case, there's three people who are PEPs. Two are political individuals and one is a diplomat. Hard to know what that means. So even if your person did show up as one of the top one or two of these people, you don't know what the political exposure could possibly mean. So the way that this gets mitigated in the classic sense is the introduction of secondary identifiers. This, all the other data that can be searched along with it to look for the likely birth date, country of origin, some sense of age, any type of identifying number like a social security number, titles, positions. So the search engines are getting smarter for how they look for this because this solves the needs of the KYC department to have a smaller list of false positives. And on the right side is an example of what we do around and what a lot of our partners do with us, actually, for the ratings and risk rankings of politically exposed people. And in this graphic, there's a list of people categorized by local up to international organizational levels, but also comparing them to the country in which they serve. And the country has its own risk. So if the person's an international organization in a very safe, sort of green country, then they might be of less risk than somebody who's in one of the red countries who has a more local political exposure, more likelihood of corruption. So this type of data is used by professionals. But there's a lot of headroom in this for artificial intelligence and other types of systems to become overlaid to the providers of data, the curators of data like us, who can take this data and help solve this problem even further, to find people in this. All right, one step further is once you have the customer, you want to check to see also if they appear in any negative press or any negative news. And so now when you do your search, you're not getting a list of 208 simple names at Resolve. You're getting back data that could look like an article that refers to an arresting officer named James Smith, or maybe James Smith is doing fine, or the victim was James Smith. And you might be concerned if James Smith's company, as a third-party provider, has received a fine for a regulatory infraction, and here it says James Smith is doing fine. So a lot of our technology and a lot of our application of RegTech has been aiming machine learning at this negative news, at this big repository, to find out which searches are actually material for the type of search you're doing. And again, there's a lot of headroom for other RegTechs to do a lot of work in here to help figure out this problem, to help with this ongoing monitoring process, because large organizations are doing this every single night for all of their customers. Right, so all we talked about right now is one type of risk, that the customer was in one of these databases for doing something as bad. But if we talk to organizations now managing risk, that's only one of the risk types. In this survey we did with OSEG, we found that the number one risk type, and this was a financial services survey mostly, is cyber risk. Cyber risk is the bigger risk for banks and financial institutions, that their third parties might have some cyber vulnerability that could cause some data loss for them. So when they're screening and they're considering the third parties, they're looking at a lot more than what's in that database. So this makes the problem tougher, because in the first instance, what customers were trying to do was just identify the entity that they're searching. Now, they have to look at multiple data sources and keep re-identifying that entity and all these different data sources. And there's a tremendous number of data sources. Most organizations are now, according to the FCPA blog, integrate something like 8 data sources into their overall process. Something has to bring those data sources together. Once you have that, the data you get back is very different. So if you're automating a system, you're bringing back comment, you're bringing back data on something, something has to be able to present that in a way and help you determine a risk score from that. The understanding of the concording, or some people say the federating of all the data that is out there into some usable format for professionals or for technologies is a really strong need. I call this sort of one of the frontiers of RegTech, because the data sources are so disparate and something needs to bring these together without yet any type of global identifier that links these together. So I think this is an area that compliance will benefit from. All right, so, and I mentioned technology. Hard to see, but the graphic here is actually one of our customers' workflows for third-party risk management. This is what they used to design the software system that we worked with a partner to build for them. But this is just an onboarding platform to understand the risk of a certain customer. And this platform is taking all this data. And so all that people can do to sort of accommodate incomplete data and accommodate differences between different data types is very difficult for a standard workflow technology. It needs something to be able to do its algorithms against, which is why this trend towards third-party risk management solutions is requiring better data. And they're not alone. There's customer onboarding solutions. I know Finergo is out there. This is what they do well. They automate the whole end-to-end process for onboarding customers. They are always going to be looking for as much data they can in the easiest most useful, informative way that they can bring it together, because that's what the technology makes as the next step. So I think the frontier for us as a data provider, for RegTechs who can provide overlays to data, is to provide exactly that. All right, so I'm going to finish with two quick case studies. One is, I'd like to talk about the regulatory importance of all this. How does this play out in actuality? So this is a story of, and I'm sorry, I don't know how people pronounce things in Cyprus or Greece, but this. So I will get the names wrong. But this is Nikos Nikolaou. He was added to OFAC's sanctions list in 2015. So let's say that Nikos Nikolaou was applying for an account at your bank, and how would you use existing technology and data to identify? This example is a real example, and we got this from our team who do the research for our WorldCheck database, and to share some data with us, we could use it for a story that would be helpful. So he was sanctioned in 2015 because his business was providing material support to the Syrian army, and the international community agreed to sanction him. He's also a designated member of the Cyprus Stock Exchange, which means he is a politically exposed person by default. And he's, as you can see in the OFAC announcement, he received the sanction in 2015. But it gets complicated when you consider that he himself is the director of over 400 shell companies that he's created. Most of the shell companies own other shell companies. And he has two colleagues whose names I can't pronounce, but they're in bold, who are involved in directorships of his shell companies, and he's involved in directorships of theirs. And when I got this report from our researcher, she also gave me a spreadsheet with 1,397 shell companies that the three of them were involved in that would be would have a UBO percentage for Nikos Nikolaou would be greater than the allowable comfortable limits for regulation. So he's a problem because he's not trying to open an account in your bank. One of his shell companies likely is. And what technology is going to be able to figure out this endless stream of UBOs? Now, we have those. We put those shell companies in our database. That's what we gather. But there's always new shell companies being gathered all the time. So this is another area for RegTech to help find this and track this to make the ultimate beneficiary owners known, so you know if you're dealing with a high-risk customer or not. So this is something that people do in response to regulatory need. Regulatory need is not the only need for this. There are social importance. I chose one example. I don't like these types of examples because this is about bombings in Europe. But this does show where information can be helpful. And in this case, the relationships is what makes it complicated. And an understanding of data relationships is what makes this whole pursuit valuable. It's UBO ownership data in political relationships and other relationships that people might have when it comes to our sanctions data. In this case, it's who is a family member of someone who bombed an airport in Brussels, who might be somebody worth looking after for a potential next bombing, because the relationship web is actually quite frightening when you look at this. This should be and everything's easy in hindsight, but it feels like some of this at least could be knowable in advance. So as the technology improves and it's tracking the relationships that it's tracking to understand financial relationships with people and political relationships, I think maybe one of the goals of RegTech is to take us even further to help prevent world sort of a safer environment for all of us, but also to sort of stop human trafficking, modern slavery, promote environmental sustainability, and all the other things that we could get benefit from that we don't do because we have to, but are worth doing anyway. So in conclusion, I just tried to make a few points. One is that I think that we are able to talk about an evolution from GRC to RegTech, at least in terms of need and the type of technology. There's a place for both of them, but if you're at a RegTech event, you're probably thinking about things that are more specific and more complicated than GRC was meant to do, so don't feel limited. I would also suggest that access to data sources and crossing these different ecosystems from KYC and AML data and screening databases to the internal audit data and risk data, enterprise risk data, each of these are ecosystems that the more these are combined, the actual better understanding of holistic risk a company can have. I do not think that combination is going to happen by getting everybody to put data into the same GRC system. I think there has to be intelligent solutions that are discovering data, analyzing data, and bringing it to the professionals even before they ask what it is, far before they get people to try to standardize it and put it into a database. Thirdly, RegTech is very important, and it provides overlays of artificial intelligence, analytics, machine learning to all this data. And if it can look at data across multiple sources and start to federate it into ways that the technologies and companies can do things with it, that would be an extremely valuable contribution. That we know there are people doing that. But when you are considering data sources and providers of any sort, I think it's worth understanding where their investments are in this, in what ways they work with other companies, how they partner with RegTechs, what RegTech they have going on themselves, because this is a very important frontier. Because remember, when GRC solutions are hard to buy, as we heard earlier in the last session. They're hard to buy because they're expensive and they take a lot of time to put in place. Compliance systems in RegTech is also difficult to do. And why do people buy it? Because a regulator told them they had to. They had an enforcement, they're in a penalty box, they need to get out, they make an investment in this stuff. And by doing that, they have raised the bar for everybody else because now the regulator has seen it and expects it. So you want to be in the forefront and work with this, and you need to understand that you can make a business case around the proximity of enforcement to peer firms of yours and be able to articulate this to management, because the threat is kind of scary when you think about the data that's there, and always compare yourself to the top companies, not the average, because the regulators are thinking about the top typically. There's increased automation that's being applied by software providers that are around doing complex due diligence tasks for onboarding, ongoing monitoring. So this, I think you should look at for what your group's needs are. Don't give up 30% of your functional requirements to some greater goal that never happens. Make sure that whatever solution you buy, whatever type it is, does provide the automation, and that automation is powered by the right type of data that you have in it. And I would say there's no one vendor who's going to ever have everything you need. I don't believe that's possible, because this is a very innovative space we're in right now. There are lots of companies building lots of great things that influence what the rest of us are also building. We're all contributing to each other. There's best of breed that can be brought together. This is by nature now. I think RegTech is naturally an integrative community. That's what's, I think, a primary difference of GRC. That ability to integrate into these solutions means that you can choose from the best of breed solutions you see to put together the ideal use case for you. Anyway, thank you for the time. And if you'd like to talk more, I'll be out at the booth during the break in networking, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you for listening to our podcast on connecting risk data ecosystems, and we hope you found the content useful. For more content on RegTech from 18 Group, visit our website at datamanagementreview.com.